Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
Our clients are coming to us sick. They had limited food while they were in there, that they were cold, that they didn't have access to water at certain points or to the bathrooms.
We need to unite as Republicans, and I need others who are independents and Democrats who are open-minded to see me as their senator and what I'm doing to fight for them. I'm independent-minded. I'm supporting and fighting for Arizona.
Your duty is to place rules in place that protect, not pervert, the innocence of our children, our precious, precious children.
And it's important to remember that the Constitution calls for a head count of every person living in the U.S., not every U.S. citizen.
And joining us to talk about President Trump's endorsement of Senator Martha McSally's reelection bid, a testy State Board of Ed meeting, and more are John Gabriel, editor-in-chief of Ricochet.com, and former congressional staffer Roy Herrera. Guys, welcome.
Thanks for having us.
So let's start with Senator McSally winning the complete and total endorsement of President Trump. Roy, we just heard her saying that she needs Republicans, Democrats, and independents to take a look at what she's doing in the Senate. What does the president's endorsement do for her?
Well, certainly it shores her up with the Republican base, which I think is partially the calculation here. I mean, there were news reports that she was potentially facing a primary challenger. This is the similar kind of situation that we had when she ran for Senate last time, when she runs against the risk against running against a very conservative Republican in a primary. She has to, you know, tack to the right in order to win the primary. So I think a lot of what happened here is to make sure she's safe with the right. But, you know, we just heard comments from her looking for votes from independents and Democrats. And I think the closer she gets to Trump, the harder that is for her.
Yeah, John, that was one of the criticisms of her campaign last time, was that she was too close to the president and kind of alienated folks, especially here in Maricopa County, who are maybe more moderate or even Republicans who don't really love the president.
I think heading into an election year, it's important she has that, at least on paper, a tie to Trump, as long as her rhetoric doesn't match it all the way through. Because they'll vote for him for president, but they want a senator that represents Arizona like McCain did, and someone from any party. I think she is just like terrified of a Kelly Ward-type situation coming up again, where in that campaign she was considered an anti-Trump person, and then she radically changed to pro-Trump, and it was just a muddle by the end, and people didn't know what to think of her.
Speaking of John McCain, that's been one of the issues that's been, I think, difficult for McSally to sort of navigate between what the president will say about our late senator and what she has had to say and probably believes about the late senator. So I wonder, how does that continue to play as it seems the president fails to let this go?
Well, I mean, you're right in that the president has continued to be, you know, disrespectful and continue to make clear that he does not like and did not like Senator McCain. And, you know, knowing that he's an icon here in Arizona, it is extremely difficult for Senator McSally to balance that, because I think probably personally, I would guess that she has a great deal of respect for McCain, but then she yet has to go out and support and be at the same events and, you know, be along with President Trump. So that's a very difficult line to kind of walk.
And there's no way to strategize for it. She just has to wake up with a little sweat beads on her forehead, picking up her smartphone, wondering what he tweeted today. That's really the only way you can do it. There's no way to manage that relationship. It's going to be a rocky roller coaster the whole way through. And when she's up for re-election the next time, Trump won't be on the ticket with her. And that this, the more she ties herself to Trump, it'll be tougher down the road for her.
The word that seems to come to mind for McSally, and to an extent Senator Sinema as well, is tightrope. That they have to sort of walk this very fine line, in Senator McSally's case, between the president and his supporters on one side and other Arizonans whose votes she probably needs to win election in her own right, who either don't like the president or are Democrats or independents who are maybe not sure about the president. How fine, John, is that line that she has to walk?
Oh, it's incredibly fine, and it's always moving as well. Just think of a tightrope in a very windy conditions. But that's what every Republican signed on for when Trump was made their nominee in 2016. It's just, if you want to survive, that's what you have to do, and figure out how close you can get to him without getting burned.
Roy, do Democrats try to take advantage? Is there a way to take advantage somehow? Do they try to tie McSally back to Trump and try to hurt her among independents who are not on the conservative side and Republicans who don't like the president?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, that line that she has to walk is increasingly difficult, even more difficult, I think, than last year, because next year Trump's actually on the ticket. He's, you know, above her on the ballot. So, you know, how do you, you know, show that you support him and are going to be voting for him while still trying to appeal to, you know, the suburban households in Chandler and North Phoenix who are turned off by, you know, Trump's rhetoric? Those are the kinds of people I think are going to be considering, you know, an opponent that McSally has, and Mark Kelly, who's, you know, an astronaut, a veteran, you know, someone that people know very well, who's talking about issues like healthcare and the economy. So I think it's going to be very difficult for her to get away from Trump in order to talk about those issues.
So there may be, it sounds like this week, a primary challenge for McSally as well, a businessman no one's really heard of, Daniel McCarthy. What was your reaction when both of you saw this?
I said, who's Daniel McCarthy? That's basically all I had. I don't know what the person represents or if there's any constituency out there. I guess we're going to find out.
Yeah, I've never heard of him before. I mean, I guess the thought that I always have when I hear of a rich individual who's suddenly interested in running for office is that there's a consultant behind that probably telling him that he should be running for
office. Cashing a lot of checks.
So that's my guess here. I've never heard of him before, but presumably if he was going to run, he would try to run from the right, because mm-hmm. I think that's the only way that would work in a Republican primary.
Does it seem as though Senator McSally is vulnerable to a challenge from the right at this point, given what she has done in the Senate and now that she has the endorsement of the president?
I think she will be. There is a certain strain of Republican activists who are just, you're never conservative enough, and the definition of conservative changes to these people on a monthly basis pretty much. So if she had ever disagreed with President Trump about anything in the past, they'd bring that up as she's not a true believer in her cause. So I think she just doesn't want to muddy the waters with a bruising primary contest. She just wants to get right to the general, focus on that, and not only for electoral reasons, just for financial reasons as well.
The thing that struck me, and I had a chance to speak with Senator McSally earlier this week, and, you know, having the obviously having the endorsement of a president is generally better than not having the endorsement of a president, especially when they're in your party. But in Arizona, the president's approval ratings have pretty consistently been below 50% for months and months and months in Arizona, regardless of generally what poll you're looking at. Roy, is there a danger that, like, this could backfire on her in some way?
Well, I think a lot of the answer, it really depends on how much in play is Arizona at the presidential level next year. I mean, I happen to believe that depending on who the Democratic nominee is, that the Democratic nominee has a real shot of winning Arizona. I mean, Trump only won here by a couple of points in 2016 against Hillary Clinton. If it's a Joe Biden or somebody like that, I think it's going to be very close. And so, you know, the risk that she runs is, well, what if Trump loses here and she's completely tied to him? Either way, it's going to be close. But really, depending on what's happening at the presidential level, really reflects how dangerous it is to be with Trump here in Arizona.
Yeah, John, do you think a presidential endorsement can backfire on her in some way?
It definitely can. And again, if Arizona is a strong battleground state and he's greeting her on the tarmac every other week, that's definitely going to rub some voters the wrong way.
The last question I have about McSally is sort of a little less political, but I wonder, with what she's done in Congress so far, and it, you know, she's been focusing on veterans, she's been focusing on sexual assault in the military, these sorts of issues that I think she's trying to define herself with, how do those play in? I mean, how much of this is just about her record?
I think most people don't dig into the news. They're kind of, a lot of it, what dominates politics, just Trump is standing over it like a, you know, 1,000-pound giant is just crazy, and people are like, are they on his side or against him? And so much goes into that, and people don't get into the details, unfortunately. She's choosing her issues carefully. Interestingly, very similar issues for veterans that Kirsten Sinema is. I think to her credit, she went back at that campaign and took notes and said, wow, I really got my strategy wrong. I have to do what she's doing. But she can't just mimic Sinema. Sinema has her own personality and style.
Does it seem as though she might be trying to take a page out of the Sinema playbook, though. We heard her refer to herself as independent-minded. She's looking to get Democrats and independents on board. I mean, is this the Sinema playbook that McSally is trying to use here?
Well, she would be smart to be trying to use that playbook, and I think the emphasis there is trying to use that playbook, because at the end of the day, as we mentioned before, she still has to deal with Trump. And to John's point, I mean, politics is driven so much by what Trump tweets and what he says and sort of the outrageous things that he supports, and she constantly has to answer for that. And so, yeah, she can talk about some issues like veterans, stuff that I think a lot of people agree on that are popular here, but at the end of the day, she has to deal with Trump. And then you also add the fact that Washington, the Senate, really isn't getting anything done anyway. So those could be her issues, but it's not like anything's actually getting passed.
There might be a few post offices that have gotten named in the last year or two. All right, guys, a couple minutes before the break, I want to move on to something that feels like it was an eternity ago, but it was only Monday. There was a very fiery meeting at the State Board of Ed dealing with some proposed changes to language around sex ed classes in public schools in Arizona. We should mention curriculum was not on the table. The state was not going to be telling districts what to do. John, what did you make of the fact that this really turned into quite an angry type of conversation?
I think this type of anger and emotion is going to come anytime there's education. I sat through some of the meetings on Common Core, you know, so no matter the subject, and especially when you're talking about something that has moral and religious implications, especially for certain parents, but this is the result of a state law change. And they need to make amendments. I didn't see anything. They weren't forcing any curriculum, as you say, down the faces of all these districts around Arizona. Everybody would have to make their own decision. So it seems like the real fireworks would have occurred on the local and school district meetings rather than a statewide thing, because the state does not force language on people.
Roy, was this sort of a double whammy? As John said, education discussions tend to be passionate anyway, and then you're dealing with something that for many people is a very sort of personal, private kind of subject matter.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this is certainly an inflammatory issue. And, you know, the people, the sort of religious conservatives and those kinds of folks that were upset with some of this stuff were clearly very organized at the meeting. But, you know, to both of your point, I mean, at the end of the day, the curriculum is ultimately done at the local level. And this meeting wasn't about that. And sex education continues to be an optional thing for parents. And so, again, you know, parents can decide whether their kids go to it or not. I viewed the proposed changes as reasonable. I mean, they basically said that you should, you know, have scientifically and medically accurate information in the curriculum. But obviously people disagreed, and it is a hot button issue, no doubt about that.
That is Roy Herrera. Also with us is John Gabriel. I'm Mark Brody with Lauren Gilger in the midst of the Friday Newscap. More in just a minute. Good morning. You're listening to the show here on KJZZ 91.5 with Lauren Gilger in Phoenix. I'm Mark Brody. We're joined in studio today on the Friday Newscap by Roy Herrera, former congressional staffer, and John Gabriel, editor-in-chief of Ricochet.com. Guys, before the break, we were talking about Monday's Board of Ed meeting, and I guess I'm wondering, like, where does the state go from here? I mean, is it just a matter of, so there was the quote-unquote no promo homo law, which was the subject of a lawsuit. The state ended up repealing that. These were some maybe additional changes, Roy, you mentioned trying to make education medically accurate. There's some other language that proponents were hoping to remove from state statute. Is it just going to be status quo for a while now until something changes?
Probably. I mean, it's hard to see. I mean, certainly the people that were opponents of the changes at this last meeting, they're going to be back. And no matter, I think, how much you tweak, you know, the additional guidelines. And so we're going to be down there again, probably dealing with this. Obviously, changes need to be made as a result of different things that have happened at the legislature and through the lawsuit. So they have to do something. I found the things to be reasonable, but clearly people disagreed. Maybe there's a compromise. But in these kinds of issues, it's very difficult to find one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially there was a lot of misinformation going on in the opposition as well, as being pushed by Planned Parenthood, and they're introducing all these specific items into it. That wasn't what people were debating at all. That wasn't the facts on the table. So I think the other side perhaps should out-organize this time, and just to balance the voices a little bit. I think it's going to go through, but this will put major strains on school district offices when they have to make the decisions about specific language, because it's going to be different for different communities around the state.
John, does this tee us up for what could be a potentially exceedingly awkward conversation about about sex ed next year at the legislature?
Oh, I want video of that. It could be entertaining.
It's all archived.
Yeah, yeah. It will be entertaining to watch them fumble through it if it's anything like me trying to talk to my teenage daughters about anything whatsoever. I've let my saintly wife handle all that because I'm an idiot on these things. But yeah, it's true that standards just have to be updated. You have to update languages. You know, I grew up in Arizona and we had our talk in like fifth or sixth grade at school and all the little boys giggling and the girls in a separate room giggling. And, you know, it seemed like something out of the 1950s when we saw it. So they have to update it. It's something that our kids need.
All right, let's move on to a Supreme Court ruling dealing with the citizenship question, basically the question asking, are you a U.S. citizen? Pretty straightforward question. There had been a lot of concern that this question would lead to an undercount. And Roy, in Arizona, an undercount would have pretty substantial implications.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, undercount would potentially lose us an additional congressional seat, a 10th congressional seat, which we're due to get after the next census. And in our state, in any other state, it could potentially lose billions of dollars because you're undercounted. So, you know, it was a victory. It was, I think, perhaps a temporary victory because I think Trump is probably going to try to do this again.
And there are more lawsuits still sort of working their way through the system at this point.
Absolutely. And there's a real question of whether there's time, you know, from a practical perspective on the printing of the census and whether Trump could even come back in time for it. But certainly he asked. I mean, I saw the reaction from him asking his Department of Justice lawyers to delay the census, which is illegal, but I see Trump asking for a lot of illegal things sometimes, so I'm not surprised. But my point is, I guess, that it is a temporary win, and it's good for Arizona, for our representation, and for our federal dollars.
I wonder, so I've spoken with some people in the Latino community here in the Valley about sort of the fear that this question raised, the sort of memories that this brought up, and the, at one point someone told me, you know, it's just insulting to even have it on there. It's like wearing a Star of David. Like you have to identify yourself in this way that I am an immigrant or I am not an immigrant. Have you heard those sorts of things from the community, Roy, or like, is this something that you think, are people's fears allayed at this point?
Well, no. I mean, that community, our community, the Latino community, the fears are not allayed because there's other fears, right? But certainly on this issue, the fears were well-founded. I mean, you know, if you add this question to the census, clearly you're going to get people who don't want to answer the question. It's not people, not just people that are here that are undocumented. It's also people here who are legal residents who don't know how to answer the question and they're not going to answer it. And so not having it in there, I think, is a good thing. I think that's going to result in more people participating. But of course, there's other issues going on with immigration and how, you know, ICE is enforcing immigration laws internally and at the border that people are dealing with in the community every day.
John, we talked about the tightrope that Senator McSally and to an extent Senator Sinema have to walk. I'm wondering about maybe the tightrope that Governor Ducey had to walk on this issue, because obviously he doesn't want to miss out on millions and millions and millions of federal dollars for the state to take care of things like roads and other infrastructure. I don't know if he cares that the state gets another congressional seat. He probably would like the state to have a little bit more clout in D.C. But at the same time, he sided with the Trump administration in saying that this question ought to be on the census.
Yeah, I think he bowed to political reality on that, but he knew it wasn't his decisions and the courts would make the final judgment. What the courts did is basically say including the question is okay in theory, but we don't trust this administration's motivations because they were pretty transparent about their motivations. And yeah, I don't think it will be a question on the census. I think they will run into print issues because there's just so much time to get ready for the census. So that's definitely good news for Arizona. And once again, it's a question that seems innocuous, but when you know the motivation behind it, you know that it's going to intimidate certain populations.
And it seems as though, based on some of those lower court cases that are still working their way through, that partisan nature is something that opponents of the question are really trying to get at. This Republican consultant who passed away within the last year, apparently they found all sorts of documents saying that if you include this question, you will decrease Latino turnout, which will be good for Republicans.
Yeah, yeah, which is as cynical as it can get, and it reminds any of us who were here during the Joe Arpaio days of just kind of the rampant Just discrimination day to day, trying to not count certain communities. I used to drive through the small community near Tempe of Guadalupe. daily to work, and every once in a while you'd see huge mobile command centers for the sheriff just harassing people on the street. And then when they saw me in my car, they just waved me through. So there's just this ugly undercurrent that we've very recently experienced in Arizona, and I think the vast majority of us, including Governor Ducey, does not want to go back to that.
Speaking of tightropes, right, like the message now that has to come out, if this question is not on the census, as I guess we can assume it will not be at this point unless something changes, which it could, if that is not on the census, what is the message to the Latino community here? How do you convince people that this is something that's worth doing and it's okay to do, especially considering, Roy, like you said, there are lots of other things that are playing into this?
Well, you know, I think there's a lot of organizations out there that are in the community trying to, explain the issue, explain, you know, what the rules are, what the law is, how important participation in the census is. I think that will continue. That's crucial work. While this was a temporary victory and hopefully a permanent victory, those groups still have to go out there and inform the community that it's, you know, you're safe by filling this out, right? Just like you need to know your rights when people are knocking on your door. I mean, those are the kinds of things that need to be told to people, and I think that's what's happening.
We have a couple minutes left in the Friday Newscap, guys. I want to ask you about an Arizonan elevated to arguably the most high-profile position in the Trump administration that is not actually the president themselves. Stephanie Grisham is the new press secretary. Now, John, there's a sort of a tradition among press secretaries from successive administrations. They leave a flak jacket in the office, you know, sort of as a symbol of, you know, you're going to be taking a lot of fire, I guess, quote unquote, from the press. How many flak jackets do you think are hanging in Stephanie Grisham's office right now?
Oh, gosh. Several, and some of them are already smoking probably. So, yeah. How anyone – good for her. Mazel tov. Have a wonderful time there. How anyone would want that position is kind of beyond me because, once again, just like we can check Twitter and it's like, oh, well, what did the president say today? The press secretary has to deal with that.
She's got to respond to it.
Oh, yeah. So she has her work cut out for her. Good luck.
Well, I mean, you know, she's following, in my view, one of the worst press secretaries we've ever had. And so the bar is pretty low. I mean, if we can start with just telling the truth to people, that's an improvement. You know, the last secretary got rid of the daily briefing, which is a tradition forever. And so I don't know if that's going to come back. I doubt it. But at the end of the day, it's a very difficult job because you don't know what Trump's going to do on a daily basis or a minute-by-minute basis. And so how do you represent somebody like that to the press?
And when he makes a decision, he changes the reason for the decision three times that day. So it's very difficult.
That's totally right. Now, I will say about Ms. Grisham is that obviously in her background here in Arizona, she represented some very mercurial figures here, political figures. So perhaps she's got some experience in that arena now that she's going to be representing Trump.
That goes along the lines of my next question. Last question probably have time for is based on her experience here and a lot of the stories that came out about what happened while she was representing some of those figures here in Arizona. What do you predict? Is she the right person for this job?
Probably is the right person for the job just because of that experience. I mean, there's not many people that have had that experience. Arizona, you know, has had a very interesting political history, and that, you know, some of that history that she's been involved in is very similar in a lot of ways to how Trump does things, right? And so maybe having that experience will help her. But again, you know, who knows with Trump, right? You can never predict what he's going to do.
It's kind of like the rule about New York. If you can survive in Arizona politics, you can make it anywhere. So.
I think Sinatra would have written a song about that had he still been around, right?
Yeah, right.
All right. That is John Gabriel, editor-in-chief of Ricochet.com. We've also been joined by former congressional staffer Roy Herrera on the Friday Newscap. Guys, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.